This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Thus far, our program has centered on the personal car and its infrastructure. This is no accident. The car speeds, stalls, thrills, and kills us, all because we need a ride. To happiness, maybe, or liberty, or nowhere. It's not the destination that matters, right? Just the journey. But what if we'd really rather journey by bus? Kafui Ato is a professor of urban studies at the City University of New York Graduate Center and the author of Rights in Transit, Public Transportation and the Right to the City in California's East Bay. In that forthcoming book, he argues that transit rights are more than just the mere option to choose a bus over a car, and also more than the problem of point A to point B mobility. He began by explaining the motivation in the 1970s and 80s behind ADAPT, originally Americans Disabled for Accessible Public Transit.
The big demand was wheelchair lifts. In the 1970s and 1980s, there were provisions at the state and local level to provide transit access to citizens with disabilities, and that often took the form of paratransit.
Paratransit is you can order up a ride, they'll come to your door.
It's ubiquitous, and it's an extremely important service. But the demands of ADAPT went beyond that. They said, we would also like the right to use the public buses like everyone else. It was not simply a demand to get from point A to point B. It was a right to be able to get on the public bus and not have to call hours in advance, to do it on your own terms and to do it as part of a larger public. Mobility in cities is central to living a dignified life.
And do we have a right to a dignified life?
I'd hope so. The definition I use in the book and that many political philosophers share is that it's a moral minimum. It's the least that society owes you as a human being, and that to infringe on that is to treat you as not a human. Transportation falls in that realm. If you can't get to the polls to participate in the most narrow sense in our democracy, if you can't get there because of lack of a private automobile, then we have a problem.
The ride-hailing companies Uber and Lyft got some good press earlier this month when they offered discounted or free rides to the polls on Election Day. And as laudable as that was, you see some sort of hidden cost here.
I think it's incumbent on cities to not rely on the goodwill of a private entity to fulfill a basic function. Now think about if there was a ballot initiative to ban Uber in cities.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Uber would be providing rides to the polls? I don't think so. That's just a guess.
There's a political argument you suggest in your book over what a city should be and could be.
This gets into an argument that comes out of Marx and Engels that emerges from the manifesto. For Marx and Engels, cities promise to rescue a considerable proportion of the population from the idiocy of rural life. Life in the country was an isolating life, an apolitical life, and they were using idiocy in this particular way. They weren't saying that people in the country were dumb or stupid. They were using idiocy in its classic sense, the Greek word idiotai or idiotis, someone who is isolated and separate from the public life of the cities, the politics of cities.
Mm-hmm.
Cities at that time places like Manchester or Liverpool or Glasgow, these are the first cities that are showing the world what industrial capitalism will mean, pushing people into situations in which their shared immiseration was really hard to ignore. So for Marx and Engels, they held out a promise for collective action, for workers taking control over the reins of production, over the machinery, over the city itself. The right to the city, in that sense, is a right against idiocy. It's a right to be part of the public. It's a right against all the kind of things in cities that alienate us from both other people and from how cities are constructed.
I wonder if you'd share a conversation you overheard on a bus between two older women and a visually impaired man chatting about proposed changes to the public transit system in Poughkeepsie, New York. It's an old city. It's certainly not a rich city.
These are people who rely on the bus every day, and they were talking about it. They're like, what is consolidation going to mean for me? And the bus driver asked them, he's like, look, this is, you guys have great comments. The debates are happening right now at the city council meetings, and you should go. And one or two of the people were like, yeah, but the buses stop running at 6:30 and the city council meeting starts after the buses stop running. So there's no way I would be able to get home. You know, even having a conversation on the future of buses was limited by the bus system itself.
There was another anecdote in your preface about the Shoppers Special.
There used to be a bus called the Shoppers Special. It actually no longer exists. It connects downtown Poughkeepsie to Kmart and Adams Fair Care Market, which is a grocery store. Mm-hmm. I went to the stop at the time that I usually go to the stop, and there was already people there. And we collectively waited for 20, 30 minutes. And so I had my cell phone, and so I called the dispatcher, told them that there was a bunch of people at the stop. The dispatcher said, yeah, there's no bus today. It's in the shop. Like, it's broken. Which, for me, was profoundly disturbing that I and the people at the bus stop were one broken bus away from not being able to, in their case, go shopping or get to work. And the kind of attitude of the dispatcher, and then the attitude of the other people I was with, who I was relaying the message to, it was even more disturbing, which is that, yeah, this happens. You know, sorry.
They didn't see themselves as having a right either.
Yeah. They did not feel entitled, in a way, to this basic thing. And I think it's the same thing. When John Hanahan...
He's right here, John Hanahan.
Yeah, when he called me and told me the trope of the guy who's hard on his luck walking 25 miles to work, and the community starts a Kickstarter to buy him some jalopy. I feel like it's the same thing, the kind of failure of public transit. It doesn't rise to the level of importance that it should. You know, I just read a report that was put out by the International Transportation Forum about the degree to which, if we are serious about mitigating greenhouse gas emissions, and slowing the pace of global warming, there needs to be a radical shift in how we think about personal transportation, and that more of us will need to be getting on public buses and getting out of private automobiles, becoming less idiotic, I would say. But if the buses aren't there, or if the buses are in the shop, or if that's the attitude we have, it doesn't look good.
And we'll still have people whose cars have broken or who can't afford one walking 25-mile round trips to work.
Yeah, yeah. No rights to the city, no rights at all.
Kafua, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kafua Ato is a professor of urban studies at the City University of New York Graduate Center.
This week's show was the brainchild of John Hanrahan, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Overbrook Foundation and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.